A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? Podcast like it's 1999.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it?
1999.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I am your host, Phil Iskov, and with us today is Carrie Whitmer, freelance culture writer and critic, to talk about Frasier, a show that, I mean, I've rewatched a handful of episodes. I've seen, obviously, I watched the show when it was on back in the day, but rewatching them, it was so lovely to like watch a sitcom at like the peak of the form, if you understand sort of what I'm getting at. Like, it's just, yes, we have a lot of Chuck Lorre sitcoms that we've had over the last however many years, but it feels like, you know, the multicam sitcom kind of had its, maybe its last big amazing moment was sort of must-see TV in the 90s. I'm not sure if you agree with that or not.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And also, I think a lot of younger people just hate multicam and they hate laugh tracks, which is kind of sad, but it really did peak then. I don't think we'll ever get it back.
Yeah, I feel like we've had a bunch of sort of experiments, sort of metatextual kind of, you know, postmodern attempts at doing the multicam. But I wouldn't say that any of them were particularly successful.
Yeah, there was Mulaney, which, what was that, like 2014 or 15?
Yeah.
Which it wasn't as bad as everyone like says it was. Like, I feel like people thought his career could never bounce back. It was so bad, but it was just like kind of boring. Like it just didn't work. Like his comedy just didn't work in that context.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing, and I want to dive into this specifically with Frasier, because I do feel like, and I was talking to a friend about this the other day, in terms of Frasier was sort of its own animal. Right. Like it was a show that, and we'll talk about all the awards that it won, but it was really sort of the quote unquote high minded multicam sitcom at that time. Right. I mean, you have Friends and you have Seinfeld, and obviously we're both enormously successful as well. But this show felt like it was sort of a little bit more quote unquote intellectual, if mm-hmm. that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely. It was kind of like, I would compare it to maybe like in the late 2000s and like early 2010s. It was kind of like Community was among that group of NBC sitcoms. It was like there was The Office, Parks and Rec, and then there was Community for the people who are like, you know, like high thinkers or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think part of it has to do with the fact that, I mean, Frasier as a character is such a intellectual. Mm-hmm. You know, him and his brother are always talking about, you know, snooty things, which is why the father is such a great foil to all of that. You have to wonder, in fact, how he had these children and what the mother was like, but that's neither here nor there.
So his mother is in, I recently, one of my pandemic rewatches was Cheers. I'm starting Frasier now. For the fifth time watching all of it. His mom is in Cheers and he says that his father is dead. Yeah. But the mom makes sense. Like the episode I was watching, it had been a while and I was like, oh, like this mom makes sense for Frasier and Niles.
It's, you know, what's interesting is, so I did a bunch of research on Frasier before watching these episodes and obviously before we did this episode. And so the writers or the creators of Frasier didn't know that he said his dad was dead on Cheers.
Yeah.
So they got pretty far into the development process and then they were like, oh, fuck. But then they rang that bell later by saying that he lied to the people at Cheers about his dad being dead or something.
I was trying to remember which episode he says it. I think it's an episode where Sam comes back or one of the characters from Cheers. It's not this. The Woody episode. And Sam's like, you told us your dad was dead. And he's like, oh, it was easier than explaining how different my dad is from me, which is honestly also kind of made me think we can talk about this later when we get more into the episode, but it made me think, I watched this show when I was a kid, and I'm like, did this show, condition me to just, lie about things instead of being honest? Because I really think it did. We can get more into that as we talk about...
Yeah, the show is... I mean, it's very funny that you say that, because I do think that one of the hallmarks of this show is people lying.
Yeah.
And it's lying for the joke and lying for the conceit of... people being forced to admit their lies.
But it's like, it would be so much easier for your life if you just said how you were honest and just spoke your truth, for lack of a mm-hmm. better phrase. It's so funny.
It is. And it also speaks to sort of one of the kind of, I would argue the DNA of this show is farce. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's very much Absolutely. In that mold of those old style kind of farce comedies. Which again is another reason why it's so lovely to watch it now and why a show like this probably couldn't exist today.
Yeah.
I think we're too jaded and too cynical an audience. I mean, I don't know if you agree.
Oh, I agree too. And I was thinking about this when I was rewatching Cheers too, because a lot of Frasier and Cheers they're not overwhelmingly positive, but no matter how hard, something one of the characters is going through, they always end up triumphing by the end of the episode. And that just isn't realistic anymore. I don't know if it ever was, but you could believe that it was realistic three decades ago. I forget what the other point I was going to make was, but
no, it's all good.
You know what I mean? Another thing that really surprises me that now that I've been rewatching Frasier is how great the writers were, and this is true for Cheers as well, as making jokes that aren't so specific to the time period that they don't make any sense. I understood them when I was a kid when I was watching it. I understood it when I rewatched Frasier when I was in my early 20s, and now they also all these jokes are so funny and they're universal, and it's even though I don't know, it's just so crazy that they managed to make this show makes sense even 30 years later, because they don't rely on very specific pop culture references. It's just mm-hmm. very universal things about being a human being.
No, it's interesting. I've worked with writers in the past that have often said that they don't want pop culture references ever in their shows. And it's for the reason I think you're talking about, which is that they get stale very quickly. They date badly. Mm-hmm. Now there are some shows that rise above that. I mean, obviously, Friends is a show that people still love and still watch, and they make all sorts of pop culture references on that show. it is interesting. There is sort of this through this podcast, we've been able to kind of obviously go backwards, watch a lot of movies, watch a lot of TV from that time. And what's interesting is how, to your point, the procedural kind of rounded off component of television back in the day, broadcast television specifically, was so comforting, right? Which is that it, you knew that at the end of every episode, there was going to be some sort of a rounded off component, and any sort of serialized elements that might have existed in television back then were mostly character oriented. They were mostly soap oriented. So like a relationship and how long that relationship went on for or whatever, that was sort of the ongoing storylines. It wasn't really mythologically based.
Yeah.
That would change, obviously. But it's interesting how, you know, how comforting that is. I mean, there's a reason why you're binging Cheers and Frasier, and I have friends that are binging, you know, Parks and Rec or whatever. Yeah. It's like shows that feel just a little bit, you know, rounded off.
Yeah, I've been having a really hard time these past 9 months, like watching anything dramatic or anything new. So like the only like dramas I've been watching are shows like Mad Men that I've already watched like multiple times. So they're familiar to me. So I don't know. I'm just so glad I started rewatching old Frasier and Cheers. It makes me so happy. Another thing is that I don't have an issue with pop culture references the way other people do. I think a lot of like TV writers have really struggle with it, but I think the ones that Frasier chooses are very timeless things because they're the kind of things that like Frasier is into himself. And I feel like he has like kind of pretentious taste. Like he's probably like, he would probably love Mank, if you know what I mean.
He would love me.
Yeah. So like he's that guy. So this, even the, some of the references in the Woody episode that we're going to talk about are just like all the songs he lists that they do at karaoke are songs that even like kids today probably know. So I don't know if they put a lot of thought into that, but it feels like they did to make it as timeless as possible.
Yeah. It's, you know, watching this episode, which I liked and, we should talk, we'll talk about like the pros and cons of this specific episode. But I went back and I went online and sort of, you know, there are many lists of the best episodes of Frasier. So I rewatched a handful of those episodes. And one in particular was the Matchmaker episode.
Oh yeah.
Which is great. And actually holds up pretty well, even if the whole, like someone mistakes someone for being gay is a little bit of a 90s trope.
Mm-hmm.
It still works and it's still quite funny.
It is. That's a good episode.
But it is a good episode. The one that I always think of, the one that is sort of the Frasier episode for me, is the radio play episode.
Yeah.
Which is just it's brilliant because it really weaponizes everything about the show and understands all of the characters and all the players. There's a specificity to all these characters, which is similar to Cheers too. Which is this idea of these very, very specifically drawn characters that you understand, even if you're just jumping into one episode, they just, you know, Norm and Cliff and Woody and these characters, they're just so perfectly drawn.
That's one of the Frasier episodes I recommend to people who are trying to get into it, because I think, especially if you're trying to convince someone who's dubious about multicams, I think that's like, it's a clever enough episode. And you understand it, even if you haven't seen any episodes before, that you can get really into it.
Totally. I'm going to give a little bit of context for Frasier for perhaps our listeners who have never seen an episode of Frasier. It was broadcast on NBC for 11 seasons. It premiered on September 16th, 1993, and it concluded on May 13th, 2004. The program was created by David Angel, Peter Casey, David Lee. It was a spinoff of Cheers, obviously, which was a sort of the continuing story of Frasier Crane as he returned to his hometown of Seattle and started to build a new life as a radio sort of therapist, I guess, is about the best way to kind of put it, while reconnecting with his father, brother, and what have you. The show was critically acclaimed, excuse me, with the show itself and cast winning 37 Primetime Emmy Awards.
Oh my God.
It also won the Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Comedy Series for 5 consecutive years. The main cast remained unchanged for all 11 seasons. When the series concluded in 2004, Kelsey Grammer had portrayed the character of Frasier Crane for a total of 20 years, including his 9 seasons on Cheers, plus a one-time performance as the character on Wings, making it the tied as a longest portrayal of a character in primetime television. The record has since been surpassed, but in animation, but whatever. So basically what happened was in the development of the show, during the eighth season of Cheers, Kelsey Grammer made a deal with the former Cheers producers of Angel, Casey, and Lee, who were then moving on to produce a show called Wings, everyone's favorite show about a little airport. I don't know why that was ever a show, but I get that people love it. But
I love the idea of an airport show. I'm sorry.
They decided that they would start a new series together. What's super weird is that Kelsey Grammer didn't want to originally do a spinoff of Frasier Crane. So they came up with a new show where he would play a wealthy Malcolm Forbes-like paraplegic publisher who operated his business from his apartment, and the main show featured a quote-unquote street smart Hispanic live-in nurse who would clash with the main character. Now, we're all thankful that that doesn't exist.
Oh my God.
That was almost the show we got.
This is the first time I'm hearing about this. And I feel like I'm really disappointed in myself because I feel like I do enough like weird Wikipedia reading, like sure. instead of sleeping, especially mm-hmm. during the pandemic. I'm really upset mm-hmm. that this is the first time I'm hearing about it.
I mean, it is, it's one of those premises that you're like, I actually understand the desire to want to pivot away from Frasier.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I do get it. And this premise kind of screams like a 90s sitcom premise in its own sort of mm-hmm. bizarro way. But my God, I think we're all thankful that we don't have that.
Yeah. Oof. It's but I'm really glad that along the way, somebody said, this is a bad idea.
Well, apparently what happened was they pitched it to the studio. They pitched it to Paramount Television mm-hmm. at the time, and they were like, we don't like this. Can you please just do a spinoff of Frasier?
Which, I mean, good for them, because I feel like a lot of times in the industry when there's like people who are that successful, they'll just say yes to whatever they see. So mm-hmm. I'm glad people were mm-hmm. saying no back then.
It's also interesting, you know, this is also a relic of certainly a broadcast, but of a time gone by as well. We don't do spinoffs really anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense back in the day when we were making things that were quantity, perhaps over quality, and that it was about syndication and it was about making as many episodes as you possibly could. That's the only explanation I can have for why Joey was made.
Yeah. I think before there was so much TV, actors were also seeking reliable work. Like, they just wanted to know that they had a job. Like, once you have a job, you just kind of, like, I feel like a lot of actors are, like, who are on TV, love TV, because it's like, I have this job for several years.
Right.
So I think that's yeah. one of the reasons why they did it. And I think, honestly, I've watched a lot of, like, shows from the early 2000s and 90s over the past few months, and my favorite episodes to watch are like old backdoor pilots.
Oh, yeah.
I think that people just really liked to have the idea of a backdoor pilot. It seemed, I'm like, these writers just fucking loved writing this stupid backdoor pilot. Like, I was rewatching Gossip Girl for some reason. I was torturing myself. And their backdoor pilot, they just like went totally hard on, but it's like, it's awful. Like, you guys loved writing this so much.
There is an element of the backdoor pilot, for those who don't know what that is essentially when within the series, they will have an episode that could launch another show. So, you know, the network says, we want such and such character to have their own show. And then you have an episode that focuses on that character and gives them a story engine that could potentially move forward. But to your point, it's funny how many of them don't go and how mm-hmm. many of them don't turn into series. So it really just feels like this, you know, sore thumb that sticks out of a season of television.
Yeah.
You're just like, why is this here? One of the things that I do love about the development of Frasier is that they agreed to do the spinoff, obviously, but they specifically set it as far away from Boston as they could so that they wouldn't be forced into bringing cast members from Cheers onto the show all the time, which, let's be clear, they still did it a fair amount. Like, it wasn't like yeah. they didn't, and we're about to talk about one. But I think that's smart of them to be like, we're going to silo this show off a little bit, and we're going to, you know, when we decide to bring a character back, it's going to be with good reason.
Yeah. I think that they do a pretty good job at not integrating Cheers too much, with the exception of Lilith, which the show, they probably wouldn't have been able to sell the show if they couldn't have Bebe Neuwirth in it as much as she is. Yeah, absolute best. Like, honestly, probably why they sold the show. They were like, oh, is Bebe going to play Lilith? And they said yes, and they're like, okay, we'll pick it up.
Okay, we'll do it. It's I have to say, she's the best. And also, she like her, what did I just see her in? She just popped up in something that I was watching the other day. Oh, my God.
Flight attendant?
That's it. Yes.
She's in the flight attendant.
And she's great. And then I actually, weirdly, for no good reason, I had never seen How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. So I watched that, and she's in that. But she's also got she's got a great Twitter presence too. Like, I love her. She's the best. I have to say that when she shows up on Frasier, it's one of the best episodes of the show. It's the best. Her interactions with Martin are just, they're fantastic. Let's dive into this episode. We're talking today about the episode, the one where Woody shows up, is the title of the episode. It essentially, Woody comes to town just on vacation, sort of. His cousins are having a wedding. Yes, it's very important.
Cousins is probably one of my favorite
lines in the episode. So he's in town for a wedding, and the long and short of it is basically Frasier and him hang out too much. It's the long and short of it, which is they kind of get sick of each other is sort of the general sense of the episode. and it's about being honest with your friends about when you've overstayed your welcome, essentially. I mean, I want to kind of, so it aired on February 4th, 1999. It was written by Rob Greenberg, directed by Pam Fryman. She's done a million episodes of sitcom television. I kind of want to talk. Let's just take a second here to talk about Woody Harrelson.
Please.
We're catching Woody Harrelson because I pulled up his Wikipedia, because we're catching him at a very interesting time in his career. Because, first of all, he's had a fascinating career in and of itself. It's incredible.
Is he like the only television actor to successfully become a movie star?
Well, I mean, George Clooney.
George Clooney. Well, I mean, I feel like, but I feel like George Clooney wasn't really George Clooney until he was a movie star, I think.
Well, ER was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it was big. Yeah, you know,
but to your point, just to be clear, and I think this is kind of what you're getting at, is George Clooney on ER and then George Clooney's film career is an extension of that persona. Woody Harrelson on Cheers is not an extension. His movie career is drastically dissimilar to that.
It's really difficult to convince people that I am not lying when I say that Woody Harrelson started his career on Cheers. Like, and when I describe the character, like I swear to God, people do not believe me. Sorry, my dad just
no worries.
Hey.
It's
probably because he disagrees with me that Woody Harrelson.
He's calling you a liar. Is basically what he's doing. Yeah. So, I mean, just for a little bit of context, Woody Harrelson shows up on Cheers in '85. He's on Cheers until '93, but he does a couple movies before Cheers ends. His character's name, just for what it's worth, on Cheers is Woodrow Huckabee Tiberius Boyd. Which is tremendous.
It's amazing. Yes.
He does do White Man Can't Jump in 92 and Indecent Proposal in 93. So both of those happen right near the end of Cheers.
I rewatched Indecent Proposal right after I finished my Cheers rewatch. It was riveting. It's pretty good.
I want to talk about this for a second. I know this is off topic, but I don't really care.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. This is the way our podcast goes. Indecent Proposal, for those who haven't seen it, is about Woody Harrelson's married to Demi Moore, and they go to a casino one night. They go to Vegas?
Yes. They go to Vegas, yeah.
And they meet Robert Redford, who's rich.
And hot.
How and why is and hot. So that's a question I have.
Yeah.
Is he still hot at this point? Hot enough that it doesn't seem weird.
So is Robert Redford now hot enough?
No. In 93, when he made Indecent Proposal.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't, the thing that frustrated me, I was like, I'm enjoying this movie, but this is a pretty reasonable situation. I was like, this isn't even that dramatic.
So just so people understand, the conceit of it that Carrie believes is reasonable is that Robert Redford offers to be more $1 million for one night with her, and Demi and Woody are I guess not doing that well, although Woody is an architect, so it's not like he's not need the money. So she takes the money and they have a night together, and as you can imagine, it creates friction in their marriage outside after that.
Yeah, it's like it's almost similar to like how Frasier works, in that their relationship isn't working anymore because they won't talk about it. Mm-hmm. If they just said, if Woody was just like, you know, it makes now that it happened, it makes me uneasy that you did this, and I don't trust you anymore. And if Demi said, I feel like you don't trust me, and that makes me uncomfortable. It no would movie. Have been fine, but no movie, but like they did it to themselves because they held it in instead of having a conversation, which is exactly what happens on Frasier, except Indecent Proposal is not funny.
It's not funny. Yeah. It's also directed by Adrian Lyne of Fatal Attraction fame. So it's also a very sexy movie in the sense of people, you know, having sex literally in the money on the bed that Robert Redford has given them.
It's amazing. And they don't make shit like that anymore.
They
it's
don't.
So sad.
They really don't.
They do not let the most popular actors fuck on a bed of money anymore. And it's devastating. Really,
it's a shame. It's a shame. So at this point in Woody's career, he's done Indecent Proposal. Cheers has just ended. He does three movies in 1994, one of which I'd never heard, called I'll Do Anything. But then he does Cowboy Way, which is a pretty shitty comedy with, I think it's Kiefer Sutherland, where they play cowboys. It's not very good. But he does Natural Born Killers, which is a huge moment for Woody Harrelson in the sense that he really shows his range. Like, he really shows, like, I am not just Woody Boyd from Cheers. I like Natural Born Killers. I understand that people have their issues with it. I don't know if you've seen it recently or ever seen it for that matter. But
it was one of the first DVDs I rented from Netflix. and I haven't seen it since. I was like 17.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's a complicated movie, I would say. It's got its issues. I'm not going to ride for, I mean, Oliver Stone is Oliver Stone, but it's an interesting movie, and more than anything, it breaks the mold of what people think Woody Harrelson's capable of. Then he actually does the voice of Woody Boyd on The Simpsons in 94, which is kind of funny. he makes a movie called Money Train with Wesley Snipes, reuniting with him after White Man Can't Jump. Then he does, in 96, he does Kingpin and the People versus Larry Flint, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's a good year.
If that doesn't really show you what Woody Harrelson is capable of as an actor, where he can play a down and out bowler in a Farrelly Brothers movie and also play Larry Flint in a Milos Forman film, pretty incredible. But then it's kind of like a bunch of weird stuff, little roles in things here and there, but he doesn't really play a lead in anything until Ed TV, which is also in 99, which I actually quite like. And that's where we are in 99. So he appears as Woody Boyd again on Frasier. He does Ed TV. He does a movie called Play It to the Bone, which isn't very good, also in 99. And then it's just kind of like, it's the Woody Harrelson we've come to know, which is he pops up in things, in stuff that he's great in. But he's also just kind of Woody Harrelson. Like,
yeah,
you know, he's in Zombieland. He's in 2012. He's in, Hunger now Games. You see me. He's in the Hunger Games. He's just, and True Detective. Like, he's just Woody Harrelson, and he's perennial in that way. But
yeah,
it's a really interesting career. What are your thoughts on Woody Harrelson? Are you a fan of Woody Harrelson?
Yeah, I think I almost became more of a fan of Woody Harrelson when I rewatched Cheers. I had seen episodes of Cheers before as a kid because my parents watched it. And like reruns, but I didn't really sit down and watch it and kind of make myself understand the cultural significance and who all the actors were until I was like 22. And I was like, oh, Woody Harrelson is amazing if he could do this and then do all this other stuff. Cause I think at that time, I think at least the first Hunger Games had come out. Mm-hmm. And I loved him in that. Like, to me, the Haymitch character is who Woody Harrelson is.
100%. Yeah.
Alcoholism aside, I think like that's just kind of his essence to me. And I then started watching more things in with him in it, or just realized that some of the movies I had seen that he's in, he's really good in, but I didn't really think about it before. Sure. So I'm not like a diehard Woody Harrelson stan, but I think he's great, and I love it when he is in something.
I think he's tremendous. I have two questions for you. Well, one's more of a statement and then a question. I watched Cheers as a kid, in the sense that it was on, but it was definitely the Woody years and not the Coach years. So Cheers starts in, I don't know, 83. I'm only 3 at that point. So, you know, it's around sort of the early 90s, near the end of its run, that I'm watching Cheers. But okay. I remember him and thinking that he was great. But it's ultimately his feature career that really kind of makes him prominent in my life. The question I have for you is this. Diane or Rebecca?
Diane. So there is the, I try, and I swear that I say this out of.
Yes. Cruciale madness.
Yeah. Like, I'm viewing it like objectively and like without considering the characters and not the actors. I'd say Diane. I love Diane. I think she's a great character, but I hate Diane and Sam together. I like it. I hate them as a couple. They're horrible. Stop. I hate them. All the episodes of this season where they, oh my gosh, it was such a slog. I love the show so much. I'm not like criticizing the show by any means, but watching the season where they're like dating is awful. I'm like, this is a toxic relationship. This is bad. Like, Carla is right. Like, Diane is a great character, but she is a toxic person. Like, she's horrible, even though I love her. So that's my take. Rebecca, I really like Rebecca, the character, but it's hard because of who Kirstie Alley has become.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did a bit of a rewatch of Cheers as well, early pandemic, when I was also needing something that just felt good. And I started at the beginning and was really kind of blown away by how good the show was from the jump. Like, it really had no latency. It just understood itself. Now, it wasn't a hit for a couple seasons, if I'm not mistaken, but it knew what it was, and it was very, very good and very funny. I have more of an affinity for Rebecca because that's the Cheers that I know or when I was growing up with. Now, I would also argue, too, that Sam and Rebecca are more of a fun couple than Diane and Sam.
Yes, so I prefer Diane as a character, but I also think it was almost a relief when she leaves because like it kind of gives the other characters more of an opportunity to have like storylines and stuff because it's not so focused on the will they, won't they. And she can be pretty insufferable intentionally. Like, she's intentionally annoying. So it's nice to have this whole new female character who's almost the polar opposite. To challenge Sam. Like, I do really like Rebecca, and I prefer Rebecca and Sam together, but I prefer Diane, if that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense. I'll say this. I'll also say this too. as a writer, I mean, having been on shows, it's interesting to think like your second lead leaving a television show is a body blow to a television show. Like the idea of finding a way to survive something like that, and not just survive it, but thrive on the other side of it, is really a testament to how brilliant these writers are. Because first of all, they bring in someone who's the exact, as you said, the exact opposite of Diane in every way, and they make her Sam's boss. So it the dynamics are completely different. Sam is now subservient and has to sort of, it's just very, very smart that it gives the show a whole new life. I mean, I think that without the casting of Kirstie Alley and without the writing of Rebecca Howe being top notch, that show probably limps for a season or two and dies. But
yeah. If Diane stayed, I think people honestly would have gotten as frustrated with Sam and Diane as I clearly am. And they would have, I think they would have lost interest. I guess you could argue that Friends did the same thing for so long, but I think that the Ross and Rachel dynamic is a little bit different.
Well, it's funny. I've read lots of articles on Friends as well, and the writers have often said that if the Monica and Chandler thing didn't work, they would have been toast because that was sort of, that gave them another lane essentially to go down. So this actually brings up an interesting question to you, because I have not seen the entirety of Frasier. I know that you have. Frasier's girlfriends? Did he have long-term relationships? Did any outside of the Laura Linney one, which is what ends the series?
Yeah. Not really. Like I would almost compare it to Seinfeld.
Okay.
Not a girlfriend of the week, but he, I feel like, at least my memory of the show, I'm not deep enough in my rewatch that it's super fresh. Like I haven't watched the later seasons as much as I have watched like seasons 1 through 4. So I'm probably not the best expert on this, but my memory of it is that it's more like maybe guest stars in a few episodes, but I don't think he ever has like a long-term girlfriend. And I think he's probably single for the majority of the show.
That's my recollection as well, but I just wanted to, I had a similar, he was sort of, he wasn't a ladies man particularly, but similar to Jerry, he kind of always had a girl friend, or if they needed him to have a date, or they needed a foil, or they needed a punchline, there was a girl that could fill that role.
Yeah.
That's sort of how. Now, here's another question for you. As a woman, Frasier Crane, an attractive man, a man that you would want to date?
I'm glad you brought this up, because I was just going to say about his girlfriends, the thing I do remember about them is that all of them are really, really, really hot. And I think most of the actresses who play them, probably several to a lot of years younger than Kelsey Grammer. But I do have to say, maybe not Kelsey Grammer or Frasier Crane in the 90s, but his early seasons on Cheers, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Like, okay. I get it. Like, I think it's more Frasier just is appealing in this weird way because of his personality. Like, his personality is actually very annoying, but it's like, oh, he like sits down and listens to like classical music. That's hot. Like it's that kind of thing.
Okay.
In the same way for Niles, but Niles to me is more attractive because he's like erratic and anxious. And I just like find those things attractive for some reason.
Sure.
So I wouldn't say I'm the average person saying, yeah, I date or bang Frasier. I don't know. But I think the women in the show who date him, I think it makes sense in the context. And he's kind of a celebrity. Like, everyone's like, oh, like, you're Frasier from the radio, which doesn't ever feel super dated, even though that's kind of like a dated concept. But I don't know. I think it makes sense.
Well, so here's a question. If you had to choose between Frasier Crane or Jerry Seinfeld?
Frasier.
Okay. Wow. Didn't yeah. even have to think about it. Okay.
Jerry, I think, is an Jerry Seinfeld, the character.
Yes.
Awful. He would be so mean. Like, he's all he does with the women he dates is like talk shit about them to his shitty friends. Like, I don't want that. I would, if Jerry came up and talked to me at a bar in like 1996, I'd be like, don't ever talk to me. Go away. Okay. But I could listen to Fraser talk for like 5 hours.
So the will they, won't they, the love story, quote unquote, of the run of Fraser is the Niles and Daphne situation. Mm-hmm. Niles is married to a woman we never see named Maris, but is head over heels in love with Daphne, who is oblivious to all of this for seven seasons, I believe. I think it's something
yeah.
like that.
Or is it the end of season six?
It might be the end.
It's murky. Sure. Yeah.
Until she finally is about to get married and he, a la The Graduate, essentially runs and destroys the wedding and they run off together. Which is when I think I tapped out of the show. So I don't even really know what the seasons post them being together are like.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, when they get together, it kind of proves our theory about Cheers that it wouldn't have been as successful if Shelley Long hadn't left, because it there are some amazing episodes in the final seasons of Frasier, and there's like even a mediocre episode or bad episode of Frasier has some like incredible jokes and I just like scream laughing, or it has like a good character arc, you know. But the later seasons are kind of all blend together and it just kind of didn't fall off the map, but the quality just wasn't as good anymore, because like the Niles and Daphne thing, as problematic as it could be at times, is one of the best parts of the show.
Yeah, they definitely walk a fine line in terms of how creepy Niles is sometimes. In particular, I watched, is it in the Woody episode with the wine?
Yeah. That's the Woody episode. Yeah.
That's weird. We'll talk about that when we get to it. But I think that this is also a testament to what you're saying, which is Sam and Diane are your number one and two on your call sheet. Niles and Daphne are your three and four on your call sheet.
Yep.
So you can get away with them getting together and still run for, I guess they go for like four more years or something like that, because it's not the main focus of the show. If your cat and mouse or your will they won't they are the two main characters and those two get together, I mean, it's very hard to sustain that. Mm-hmm. But you know, some shows are successful at doing it. I mean, Friends is a great example, right? They get together, they're together for a bit, but people forget how long Rachel and Ross were not together. I mean, it's most of the show. So there is something to be said for that. The other thing that I think is interesting, to your point about all of Frasier's girlfriends being super hot, I appreciate that he ends up with Laura Linney, which feels like the perfect person for him to end up with.
It really does. And I feel like it's crazy that they even got her to do that. Like, yeah, I guess I don't know. It's just, I can't understand a time when a movie star as big as Laura Linney, especially as she was at that time, would be like, yeah, I'll be on the final season of Frasier. Like, it's just like of a sitcom, like on NBC. Like, that just doesn't happen anymore. I guess it's just because we're so far from like network television at this point, being the interesting TV. It's just a concept that I can't really process. And every time I rewatch those episodes, it just blows my mind that they got her. Like,
I think it's a testament, I think, to Frasier, right? And where in the annals of television, the esteem that people had for that show, obviously winning all those Emmy Awards, all that sort of stuff. I imagine that Laura Linney had to be thinking like, I can be the thing that wraps up the show. Like, I could be the thing that they end Frasier's character with. I mean, that's kind of a lovely thing.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the it's one of the things about the final seasons that actually works really well.
Yeah, I completely agree. So in this particular episode, the episode opens with Beverly D'Angelo is the caller of the week this week. This is another thing that Frasier did that I kind of love and is so lo-fi, which is they would have these cameos every week of famous people calling in, not as themselves, obviously, as callers or what have you. And like, you didn't know who they were. And then at the very end in the credits, you could maybe figure out who the caller was, or they would, you know, whatever. But like, that's such a 90s lo-fi thing, to like an audio cameo.
It's just, yeah. And it's so funny that like, if you're like looking down, like at the end of the episode, you could just like miss the credit. And in the 90s, like, was there really a way to figure out if you didn't have a computer? It's like with the internet, it's like, I'll never know. Was that actually David Duchovny?
Yeah, it's true. It's great. So Beverly D'Angelo calls in, and then Woody calls in. But before we get to Woody, there's this bit with Roz, who I guess in a previous episode had gone out on a date with this guy, Noel, who works at the office, which is this kind of weirdo guy that she's clearly not interested in and is not taking the hint that they're just friends. Then Woody calls in because he's lost at the airport.
Is this Seattle airport big? Like, I guess it's bigger than...
I don't know. He calls rather than just calling Frasier, he calls into the radio show to tell him that he's lost. my favorite bit of this sort of like classic Woodiness is Frasier says, "I'm on the air and so are you." And then Woody says, "No, I'm still bartending at Cheers. I wonder how these rumors get started."
it was such a clever way to establish for people who hadn't seen Cheers, like, who Woody is. It's just instantly, you're just like, okay, I understand this human being. But then if you watch Cheers, you're like so psyched. Oh my gosh, so like, great. Woody jokes are back. Yeah.
It's also like, Frasier follows it up by saying, "I know this might sound surprising, but we're catching up right where we finished." Basically, like, we and their relationship is fantastic.
I think that's probably my favorite line in the episode. So good.
So there's something in this episode, and forgive me if I missed it, but Martin, Frasier's dad, we then cut to him and the Eddie runner, which is that he says that Eddie's looking weird because they took him to the groomers.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And it doesn't go anywhere. Does it go anywhere? Like crazy?
No. I think it may be. That's like one of the weird parts of the episode. And I guess now I'm just like not really into jokes about old people losing it. Like, it's just not funny. I don't think it ever was, but I feel like people used to find it very funny. But I feel like they only had that bit so they could get, like, Eddie in the same room as Woody Harrelson. You know what I mean? They just needed a reason for Eddie, Martin, and Woody to interact. And it felt like that was, like, the best thing they could come up with, which is, like, they could have done better. But I feel like they probably just were rushing to get as many people in the same room with Woody as possible. And that's just...
Yeah, it was a weird thing. I was expecting some sort of a callback to this, and it never really came. But Woody shows up at Frasier's apartment and is introduced to Daphne and Niles and Martin. And he explains that he's in town for his cousin's wedding. Niles then asks, is your cousin the bride or groom? Woody says, both are. Niles says, oh, they're kissing cousins? To which Woody says, oh, they're doing a lot more than that. That's why they had to get married.
So I love this joke. I know that we as a society are trying to move past making jokes about how people in like the Midwest or the South like are cousins and they get married. But this is a good representation of those kinds of jokes because it's more about Woody and like his, I guess, social network and family and not about where he's from. Like, it's not like, oh yeah, they're from my cousin, my West Virginia cousins are getting, like, there's nothing specific enough that makes it super offensive, I guess, if that makes sense. So that's why I think the joke still works all these decades later.
Yeah. And I would actually kind of, you know, the more I think about this episode, the bolder I actually think it is in terms of what it's saying. Mm-hmm. In terms of the cultural and the class distinctions between Frasier and Woody. And I think that a lesser show might have just brought Woody in, cracked some Woody jokes, you know, easy 22 minutes and be done with it. But for them to actually kind of have something to say about these two people, which is that essentially at this point, Frasier and Woody, there's a moment where they come into the apartment and Frasier peels off to talk to his dad in the kitchen and says, I can't do it anymore. Like, I can't pretend as though I'm laughing at his jokes. We don't have anything in common. All we talk about is stuff from 10 years ago. And like, that's a pretty, you know, rich and complex way of coming at this relationship is, I guess, what I'm getting at. I think that they could have been cheaper about it and they weren't. And I respect that.
Oh, absolutely. They could have just made it. Let's get Frasier and Woody in as many scenes as possible, reminiscing about the old Cheers days. But it also almost felt like a meta commentary on the show being like, this isn't Cheers and we're not trying to make it Cheers, even though there's a character from Cheers here, which I appreciated. And it was the first time I watched the episode this morning and last night. I watched it twice. And I was just like, it made me kind of emotional because the first time I watched that episode, or the last time I watched it, was years ago when I was much younger and really naive and hadn't really like lived my life as an adult yet. And now I'm like, I actually understand what it's like to have a friend like this. Like it's connecting, like if you a friend from college you haven't seen for a while or something, I'm just like, we don't have anything in common. The only thing we did have in common before was just that we were in the same place at the same time. So I felt like they were both realizing we were really only friends because you worked at a bar that I went to.
Yep. Yep.
Which is absolutely true for Frasier and Woody. Like even when Cheers was on, they had nothing in common except that they were usually at the same bar.
Yeah, it's I know exactly what you're saying, and it happens. It's happened to me on many occasions as well. That idea of you go to drinks or dinner with an old friend and you reminisce for a while, and then by the end of that, you're done. You know what I mean? Like you really only have like 2 hours worth of material or so before you're just like, okay, well, I guess we're going to move on with our lives. So I appreciate that they do that. They do get in some obviously some great jokes. There's a moment where Frasier and Woody are telling Martin about putting like a marmot or something into Cliff Clavin's mail bag.
A ferret.
Yeah. And it scares obviously Cliff, but Woody thinks that, so Frasier says, did you see the look on his face? And Woody thinks that he's talking about the ferret and not Cliff. Like it's what's so lovely about Woody and what I imagine is so much fun to write, why it was so much fun to write jokes for him and similar to Coach too, prior to, unfortunately his death is, it's earnest. Like it's heartfelt. It's not like he's not, yes, he's dumb or not dumb, but you know, misguided, I guess, or unaware of things, but it's so earnest and heartfelt. It's kind of lovely.
Yeah. I think that it works so well. Cause like you said, like it's very earnest and they're never making fun of him. They're just like it's just completely who he is. And like they're making fun of him in a way, but they're not like they don't hate him. I think like a comparable character would probably be Andy Dwyer. Yes. Who, I mean, Chris Pratt became famous because he was like this lovable idiot, but I think that at many times on Parks and Rec, it was more like they were mocking him. But Woody, they're never making fun of because you can tell that they love him. And these jokes like sound like they are so easy to write, but they are probably the hardest jokes that they ever had to write.
It's funny you bring up Andy, because I think that's a good comp. They both feel like golden retrievers. You know what I mean? They both just feel like they would lay down in traffic for you. They love you to death. They're wagging their tail and they're always happy to be there, even if they're a little bit dopey and they don't completely understand what's going on all the time.
Yeah.
So at this point, Frasier is trying to get someone to go to karaoke with Woody and him that night. He goes to Cafe Nervosa, sees Roz. She says she'll come along, but then Gil overhears and invites himself and Noel, and then Noel scares off Roz, leaving Frasier to go to karaoke with Woody, Gil, and Noel. Three people he doesn't particularly want to be going to karaoke with. It's a funny bit. I'm glad we didn't see it, really.
Yeah, but it's also one of those bits where it doesn't really work if you hadn't seen another episode of Frasier. Like, you have to know those, like, side characters to understand how funny that is and how painful of a situation it would be to have to go to karaoke with them. Mm-hmm. But it's still great. Like, I feel like Frasier did a great job as, like, at rewarding people who have seen every episode.
Yeah, and it's a good joke because it's better not seeing it, right? Like, you're thinking about, oh God, how terrible this is going to be. And then, you know, later Frasier comes home and is telling them about about the songs that they're singing. What is it? Everything you could do, I could do better.
Yeah, and then Frasier says they were both wrong, which is so funny. But that's what I was talking about earlier. Like, these references to the songs are song. Like, I feel like everybody knows that song. And then I think he said someone else sang, or one of them sang, "I Feel Pretty." Like, that's another song that people know. Most people know. So none of them were super alienating. Like, and you'd think Frasier would have some specific reference that no one would understand, but they managed to make it work.
Yeah, and that's a prime example of, like, whatever the big hit song was in 1999, they could have very well had thrown that in there as a joke, and they didn't. Yeah.
They could have done, I guess it was early 99, so maybe not Livin' La Vida Loca, but something like that.
But they could have done something like that, for sure.
Yeah,
or like Mambo Number 5 or whatever. Something
okay, something that... Mambo Number 5 would still age pretty well, I have to be honest.
Yeah, well, sure. Woody comes over, tells Frasier that he has to go home because his daughter has an ear infection. Frasier's thrilled. He doesn't have to hang out with Woody again.
Can I make a comment on this?
Please.
I was like, is an ear infection a bad enough thing that you have to fly all the way across the country when you just got there? Because I've had ear infections and you just take antibiotics and go to sleep.
Yeah. And also, you know, the mom's there.
Yeah.
The kid is like left alone.
It's just so like, I know that they were coming up with something that wasn't so dramatic that Woody would be an asshole for lying about it.
Correct.
But the way that Frasier just was like, oh, of course, an ear infection, you have to fly back to Boston. I'm like, your son lives in Boston. Yeah. Like, you chose to live, like, and you think that a dad has to be with their son for an ear infection? How many ear infections have you missed, Frasier Crane?
Yes, exactly.
That's all I have to say about that.
No, it's obviously a shitty excuse, which we quickly realized was an excuse. Frasier goes to dinner with Niles and spots Woody at the bar by himself. Woody then proceeds to cover his face with a menu and run to the bathroom, which is fantastic. It's great. So Frasier goes to the bathroom, knocks on the door. Woody pretends he's not in there, comes out. Frasier says, why did you lie to me? And he says, I guess I didn't want you to know I was in the bathroom.
It's so good. It's so good. Oh my God.
They admit to each other that they'd grown bored with each other and over the course of these couple days, and that they didn't have anything to say to each other. And what I love, and this comes back to sort of the class distinctions and the difference between them, is that Woody thinks Frasier's life sucks.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, he just doesn't have an Woody is so sheltered that he just doesn't even understand that, like, Frasier's apartment is amazing. I mean, it's very 90s, but it's an amazing apartment. Would love to live there. And he doesn't seem to understand that Frasier has, like, a job. He just doesn't understand. He just doesn't understand anything that doesn't happen to him. But it's so cute.
There's also totally yes to all of that, but there's also something really, there's something endearing again about Woody thinking that he has all these roommates. So to him, yeah. It's like, oh, he's got all these roommates, so he doesn't even have his own place. He doesn't really understand his job, obviously. There's something very sort of nice about the fact that Woody loves his life, and Frasier looks at Woody's life and thinks, well, that's not the life that I would want. And Woody looks at Frasier's life and says, that's not the life I would want. So in the end, like, they have very different lives, but they love their lives.
Yeah. And it's almost, yeah. It's a kind of also a cute little story about two people from very different classes kind of learning to understand each other in a way. Frasier probably more so than Woody, just kind of being like, Woody is content with just being a bartender for the rest of his life. And that's okay, even though that's, like, I'm more ambitious than that.
I mean, Woody also, I mean, Kelly's super rich, so Woody doesn't have to worry too much about things.
I did forget that, yeah.
So there's that, but that's neither here nor there.
But even despite that, he probably doesn't even have to work, but he chooses to be a bartender anyway.
Speaking of Kelly, one of my favorite Woody moments is when he writes the song for Kelly.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Kelly, 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 Kelly.
It's like, the more we talk about Woody, it's just amazing what Woody Harrelson can do. I think the more we talk on this podcast, I am becoming more of a Woody Harrelson stan.
It's amazing. Really is. It's, you know, it's it's basically, the episode ends, Frasier and Woody decide they're going to have one last beer together at the bar. I guess Niles will just sit by himself for as long as that takes. And they cheers, and they say cheers. And it's lovely. Like, there's something really sweet about that moment. They look at each other. It's like back being a cheers, whatever. It's really nice. And again, it shows there's something in the look that Woody Harrelson gives Frasier in that moment when they cheers. There's a lot going on there. It feels like a moment, I mean, of recognition, not just of these characters, but also the depth of their relationship, the years of working together, and that they get to kind of have this moment together again, and then Woody will disappear, and that's that. But yeah. it's really nice.
Yeah. I think it's really nice to see adult relationship kind of end, but it not on bad terms. It's just like, we love the time we had together. We don't have anything in common anymore, and that's fine. If I see you again, that's great, but we're not going to go out of our way to be buddies anymore because our lives have changed and we're in different places and always kind of were. It's really nice to see that, because I think that's something that you never really see. You only see things, especially in television and film, you only see friendships or relationships end very badly. So it's nice to see something just so earnest and sweet and really, really real. Something that I think happens to every adult.
For sure. I mean, I don't, and forgive me, I don't remember, but I know Sam shows up, Woody shows up, Lilith shows up. Does anyone else show up from here?
Cliff, Norm, and Diane. I think,
oh, wow.
I should really rewatch the Diane episode now, because I completely,
I remember the Diane one. When you said Diane, I was like, that I remember. I didn't know that Norm and Cliff showed up as well.
Cliff, I think, comes, he's like in Seattle, you know, for like some kind of postal worker conference, I think. Sure. Something like that. I could be wrong. It's something like that. But I feel like most of them kind of have a similar sentiment in that when they come, Fraser's kind of annoyed with their presence. Not that he doesn't like them, but he's just like, I have this completely different life, and it's weird when people from my old life are in my new one. Which, I mean, I've had the same experience, I think. Not as dramatic, obviously, but... and if the people aren't as attractive as Ted Danson.
Sure, of course.
But, you know.
Big picture, do you have a favorite Frasier episode? Do you have,
Yes. I wrote it down because I felt like you were going to ask me. So one, I have two. Chest Pains, season 3, the one where Frasier is cheating at chess because Martin keeps beating him.
I do remember this one.
That I feel like that's a classic. I think my favorite dynamic on Frasier is the family dynamic, the father and son, Frasier, brother and brother. The episodes that focus on them are my favorite. And I also like Death Trap, which is a later season episode that's very good, where they visit their childhood home and they find a skull and they like freak out and think it's like somebody died in their house, but then they realize that it's a skull from a production of Hamlet they were in. I haven't watched it in a while, but it's like when anyone asks me, that's one of my favorite episodes. And honestly, any episode with Lilith, I love the one where Frasier's on vacation and Lilith is staying with her new boyfriend in the villa right next to them. That one's good. Any Lilith episode.
When Lilith shows up, the first time that she shows up, one of my favorite jokes in that episode is that Frederick has to wear a bug net at summer camp, like a hazmat suit. And she says, oh, I hope that the kids don't make fun of him. And Martin says, oh, you know how kids are. I'm sure they're being really nice. All he needs is a birthmark on his forehead so they can beat him to death with a shuffle.
Martin maybe says like the most whack things out of anybody.
It's what's great about these episodes, and it's why they're special episodes. When these characters show up, it's that it just the history and also the foil to play off of everybody. I mean, Lilith is just such a perfect foil. The way that she can cut them all down, like she cuts Niles down in like 5 seconds. It's so good. I think it's a really special show, and I do get why it won all the Emmys. I get why it was such a big hit. But I think that you tapped into something earlier that I think is really important. The family dynamic of the show is it's in the DNA of the show, and it comes back to in the development, the creators were trying to find they basically decided that they wanted him to be a radio therapist. But then when they realized that, they knew that the show couldn't be a workplace show because then it would feel too much like WKRP in Cincinnati, and they didn't want another radio show. So one of the creators at the time had his father living with him and was like, what if we actually focus it more on his living, like on his lifestyle and the people in his home? You bring the brother in, you bring the father in, and his caretaker in Daphne. And all of a sudden the show, it's just got so much more emotion in it and it's got so much more character in it, right? I mean, if it was a radio show, then it becomes kind of inside baseball and it becomes about the making of a radio show. And they have that infused in the show. It's there whenever they need it. But to your point, the heart and the character connections between these people is why I think the show has lasted and why it's still so watchable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it was so smart of them to just put Frasier in his living situation, because you never really see that with any character on Cheers. There's some episodes where they're at their home, like my favorite episode of Cheers, where Frasier and Lilith host Sam and Diane for dinner. One of the best episodes of television ever made. But that's like one of the only episodes where you actually see their home lives, but it's not even about what their lives are like outside of Cheers. It's still about Cheers.
Well, it's funny. I just did an episode recently, by recently, I mean yesterday, on Law & Order SVU, which also premiered in 1999.
Oh my God. Wow.
Very different television show. But it's interesting. It's a double-edged sword, the going home with the characters dynamic. Because if you don't use it well, and I would argue that SVU doesn't do it as well as it perhaps could.
Yeah.
What it becomes is just sort of like, oh, okay, you know, why can't I think of his name? Jesus Christ. Stabler's, you know, dealing with his garbage disposal. And you're just like, so cool. Like, you just ate up like 7 minutes of screen time on like him and his kids. And it doesn't do anything, right?
Yeah.
If you use it well, like I think Frasier does, as obviously dissimilar as these two shows are, it becomes so vitally important to the show, and it can really sort of help your longevity. People don't go to SVU for the backstories, really. I mean, ultimately, they're going for the crimes and they're going for the procedural crime-solving component. And I would argue that people might not necessarily come to Frasier for the family dynamics, but it's what
That's
makes
why
it
they
special.
Stay. It's why they stay, and it's what makes it special,
It's just really interesting to sort of, you know, 99 is a fulcrum point in television because it's the year that The Sopranos premieres and Sex and the City is also in its second season. And it's sort of this moment when, you know, anything becomes possible, right? Where TV writers watch The Sopranos and say, oh, wait a second, we can do that. And all of a sudden, you really have this sort of bifurcated moment in television where broadcast is still going strong and it will for many years to come. But broadcast is still king. And you're seeing it in Frasier, you're seeing it in Seinfeld, you're seeing it in these shows that are obviously doing very, very well at the time. But they don't all stand the test of time like this show does and like Cheers does or what have
you. Yeah, I mean, I was too young in 1999 to like know what was going on. Outside of like the big thing, like all of those, but I wouldn't, even if I wasn't, I probably wouldn't remember like the other shows that were on the networks that aren't Frasier or SVU or Sopranos.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a time. I mean, I was 19 in 99. So, you know, I was, watching a fair amount of this, but not as much of it as I would come to watch more television as I got older and as I decided I wanted to do that with my life. But NBC, must-see TV, I mean, that was everything. I mean, that was the 90s. That was, you know, was untouchable.
Yeah, I was nine. I was a little sheltered fourth grader. So I just watched what my parents watched. And my parents watched the must-see TV on NBC, but they didn't like Friends because they were older. Like, they were too old for Friends. Like, they didn't relate to that. So they only watched Frasier, Seinfeld, and Will and Grace. They did not have the TV was not on when Friends was on. So I was never a Friends person because I never really saw it.
That's really funny. Where are you from originally?
So in 99, I was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. But I'm originally from the Chicago area.
Okay. I think that, you know, obviously some shows speak to certain regions of the country as well. And I think, I think it's interesting how you can certainly sense that.
Yeah. I did watch some Friends. I would watch Friends when, syndicated episodes on the WB. Sure. But I did not discover Friends through my parents, but that's definitely how I discovered Frasier. I would like sit down.
So
and watch it.
Were you, the WB was a little aged out of, so you're nine at this point, right? So you're not watching Dawson's, you're not watching Buffy, you're not watching those things.
And
did you watch those things later?
Yeah, so I eventually got into Dawson's Creek when I became a teenager pretty soon after that, you know, so I got into Dawson's, but I wasn't super into Dawson's Creek because I just didn't start it from the beginning. I was an OC girl, die hard for the OC. Sure. That was like the first TV show that I really dived into to the point where I was like, why didn't I realize I wanted to like be an entertainment writer? Because I was on OC message boards like for hours every day. Like, of course, this is what I wanted to do. Yeah. But I would say like, even though I was very young, like that was 1999 was probably the year when I started to like, my hobby became movies and TV. Because I think because of Titanic, I started to like get really into movies. Like I was just very fascinated by how it was made and all the movie stars. And that's kind of when I went out of my way to understand what was going on. Like I would cut out articles in the newspaper that were like about like any movies. Very strange behavior.
Did that as a kid too.
It's cute, but it sounds weird to say it now. Like why would I cut out like some random article about James Cameron?
I remember as a kid, I think I was probably 14, something like that. And I had like a binder of like all sorts of articles and shit. I'm just like, what was I going to do with that? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just, there
was just no other way to have it. But I guess, all this to say, I went to Catholic school. My parents weren't super strict per se, but we only had the basic networks. On our TV. My parents didn't pay for cable until I was much older. Probably not till like later high school. So the network shows were the only things that I could see. Like even if I had wanted to watch The Sopranos or Sex and the City, I couldn't watch it. Because we didn't have HBO. We didn't even have Disney Channel. This was before Disney Channel soon became part of the package, I think, like, but not until I was like too old to care about Disney Channel. So I didn't watch Lizzie McGuire, none of that stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Those were a big deal. Those were a big show.
Yeah. So I think like these NBC comedies that were syndicated on all these channels every single evening when I got home from school, like Frasier are the shows, and Seinfeld are the shows that I loved because they were really the only shows that I had access to for a long time.
Were you watching SpongeBob in 99?
No, I never watched. We didn't have Nickelodeon. I wasn't even when we had Nickelodeon, I was not allowed to watch Hey Arnold because a mom at my school said that they said the word crap on it.
Oh,
and
shit.
So it was right. frowned upon for parents at my school to allow their children to watch SpongeBob.
Ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
I know. The kids who got to watch SpongeBob were like really edgy.
So I have an OC question for you. I didn't watch the entirety of the OC, so I can't speak to it on that scale. But
okay.
Seth and Summer are another example of like not the leads being your main love story. Am I right in that assumption?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause it felt like, why can't I think of Ben McKenzie's character's name?
Oh, Ryan and Marissa.
Right. Was that the other love story that we were supposed to be invested in?
Okay. Yeah. Can I spoil the OC? Is that
absolutely? Absolutely.
So I think it's pretty much common knowledge that Marissa, Misha Barton's character, dies in the season three finale. And the show was always very focused on Ryan and Marissa's love story, but Seth and Summer kind of helped propel it and make it more interesting and more fun because Ryan and Marissa are both very dark characters. They're not fun at all. Like they're on, like I love Ryan, but like he's kind of a drag. They're both together. They're kind of a drag, almost like Sam and Diane. And I think they were aware of that. But the show, Ryan and Marissa's relationship becomes more interesting after Marissa dies, and Ryan's like kind of examining his relationship with her.
That's interesting. What I think is interesting is that Seth and Summer were kind of. They were almost like memeable before there were memes. Like they already had that because they were so different and yet so compatible. It was just sort of, there was something there, obviously, in that chemistry between them. I also just remember that show just being talking about This American Life, talking about Death Cab for Cutie. Like I just felt like that show was just very much on the pulse.
Yeah.
In a way that, to kind of circle back to what we were saying up top, do you feel like that hurts it now? Like it was so in the moment and so zeitgeisty at the time. Does the show still hold up?
I actually, a shameless plug, I actually talked to Adam Brody for The Ringer a few months ago.
That's awesome.
And we kind of touched on this. And I think that I think that it's almost the opposite of Frasier in that, like you said, like Death Cab for Cutie, This American Life, like all these references are so specific and so of the early 2000s. But I think it still works because it's so specific. Like it's not, because I don't know. Now I forget what I was saying and what you asked, but.
No. Just that idea of I just wonder if it dates the show. Like I think that it works because we were around then and we understood it.
So now I know what I was going to say. Yeah. So I think that it dates the show, but I think that the OC is so early 2000s in its look already, like the fashion and everything, that it works even for people who didn't grow up with it, because it's kind of like a time capsule. Like for someone who's like a teenager now, like discovering the OC, I think they are engaged with it because it's so compelling to be like, they wore that, like they talked like this, like what is this song like, and you can kind of discover what that era was like through the OC more than any other show from that time. So I think it works. What I talked to Adam Brody about, does Seth work now? And the answer is no. He's actually pretty annoying and kind of a bad person. He's one of those people who I rewatched the OC in like May, one of my early pandemic rewatches. And Seth is like the kind of nerd who, I don't want to say incel, but he's the kind of nerd who thinks that he's being bullied, but it's actually like he's actually just mean to everyone, so they're mean to him back. Like the Liz Lemon in 30 Rock plot when she finds out that she was the bully. It's almost like that.
Have you seen Promising Young Woman yet by any chance?
No, unfortunately I have not.
I watched it last weekend, and I only bring this up because Adam Brody is in it.
Yes.
And it now kind of almost feels like perhaps it's a wink at Seth.
He kind of mentioned that. He was like, I can't spoil the movie. And he also, when I talked to him, he hadn't even seen the full movie yet. But he was like, oh, like there's something, like I think you'll understand like with my role in this movie. So I've been trying to see it, but.
Yeah, it's in a couple of weeks, I'm sure everyone will have seen it. But I know what you're saying about the sort of, you know, the nice guy, the idea of the nice guy who's still kind of using his nice guy-ness to get what he wants from women.
Yeah. So he's not like completely horrible, but rewatching it now as an adult woman, I'd be like, if this guy, he was like my heartthrob. Like I had Seth Cohen posters all over my bedroom and stuff. Did not tell Adam Brody this, but you know, like it's just so, it was such a weird feeling to watch this as an adult and be like, fuck that guy. Like, no, like that's not romantic. I don't want that. He's so annoying.
Yeah. It's a bummer. It's, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we've gone through quite the 4 years with the current administration. And I think that it has forced us to reevaluate all sorts of things about ourselves as a country and as people, the way we treat other people. And it has hurt some of my favorite pieces of pop culture in some ways. I mean, a prime example is I just watched an episode of Sex and the City for this miniseries that I'm doing, and fucking Donald Trump shows up, and you're just like, God.
Yeah. So, you initially asked me to be on the podcast to talk about Sex and the City, and I was like, I know this sounds really weird, but I've never seen Sex and the City. I've seen a few episodes. I've seen the episode where David Duchovny is naked, I think. Is that right? There's an episode with David Duchovny. I think you maybe see his butt, which is probably why I watched it when I was a teenager. I definitely like was like, I want to see David Duchovny's butt. I'm going to watch this.
Reasonable.
But, yeah. And I've seen the movies. When it premiered, I was a kid and we didn't have HBO. And I have sisters. My older sister got into Sex and the City when she was in high school, but it was her thing. So like when your sisters, it's very competitive. And she's like, well, this is my thing. This can't be your thing. This is my thing. So I made my thing the OC and she had Sex and the City, but I never watched it. And now I feel like it's almost too late for me to watch it. I understand the references. I know who the characters are. I know who Big is. And is it Aiden, the other guy? Yep. I know those arcs. I understand all of the characters or whatever. But I'm just like, I don't know if I would like it if I watched it now. Because for me, it's not nostalgia.
I hear you. I think that if you were to watch it, you would probably have to kind of keep your head down for the first two seasons, is my guess.
Mm.
The show gets exponentially richer and more complex from three on, but those first two seasons can be a little bit sort of... I don't know. They might be bumpy for you now. But, I mean, I would also argue, too, that, like, it's a very quick binge. I mean, you'd watch it very quickly, I imagine. I also understand that in these times right now, when maybe you just want to watch Frasier, is completely reasonable, too.
Yeah, it's, like I said, like, how long have we been talking? Like, one of the first things I said was, during the pandemic, it's really hard for me to pay attention to something new. So I'm just like... Like, I only have the mental capacity for Frasier, Cheers, and, like, Bravo shows. It's just, like, Real Housewives and, like, Below Deck is, like, all I have the mental capacity for at this time. I don't know when that will change. I hope it's soon, because I need something that will...
Reasonable.
Yeah, I need something that will enrich my life. That's not just Frasier.
Well, thank you so much for coming on to talk about Frasier with me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I hope that you'll come back for something else in the future. We do movies and other TV shows and all that sort of stuff. I so appreciate you coming on to talk about
that. Oh, absolutely. You can probably tell that I like talking. I don't have many people that I talk to now, you know.
Well, we're doing a Patreon right now. On 1989 films, which I know is
that's the year I was born.
So I don't even know if you know any of the. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the movie.
I will say, as much as I was limited on my TV, my parents were pretty good at like my film education. My mom was like in her 20s in the 80s. So like those are her like movies.
Sure, sure.
She made me watch The Big Chill when I was 7. So
it's a great movie, but I'm sure you were bored by it.
I became like obsessed with it, even though I didn't understand it. Yeah, because I was like, I want to be like an adult and watch like the movies that adults like. So that was like my
wow. She imprinted you with this this emo movie.
I should have said this about myself in 1999, but if you asked me what my favorite movie was in 1999, a 9-year-old probably would have said The Big Chill.
that speaks volumes about you, Carrie. Yeah. That's amazing.
Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, there's tons of. We're doing episodes on music as well, and so whatever it is,
we'll
have something else to bring you back for. But thank you again for coming on to talk.
No, thank you so much. This has genuinely been. It's nice to have a new thing to break up my day.
I hear you. Believe me, this podcast is a godsend when it comes to a pandemic. One last thing, please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989, Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hanna, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeits1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits1999. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits1999. Thank you so much to Ernie and Will for producing our episodes, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our amazing art and theme songs. And most of all, thank you all for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.